Okay. I said we would talk a little about Kabbalah today. If we look at number 8, the Nefesh HaChayim, okay, the Kabbalistic Sefer that us Litvaks learn, talks about, here he's not dealing head on with the issue of how tefillah works, although if you look a little later on in Shaar Beis, he says explicitly, and this explains how tefillah is effective. He has a famous vart, Veha'inyan, number 8, Himilas Baruch. What do you think Baruch, right? All our tefillahs, all our baruchs, we always say Baruch Ata Hashem, Baruch Ata Hashem, Baruch Ata Hashem. So what does Baruch Ata Hashem mean, Mendel? What does Baruch Ata Hashem mean?
You are the source of blessing, I think it's one of
those. Right, you are the source, meaning, Baruch Ata Hashem, we are making a declarative statement about the greatness of Hashem, right? It's basically a praise of Hashem, you are the source of blessing. Now, of course, what is Mendel not saying? Right, we bless it. Why is Mendel not saying we bless Hashem? Because it sounds kind of apikorsis. Exactly. So this is the basic problem. The basic problem is that is that Baruch Ata Hashem means like we're blessing Hashem. What does it mean to bless Hashem? Right? Like Yaakov, like Yitzhak bless Yaakov, right? And like Hashem says in last Shabbos, not in last Shabbos, but Hashem says in the Chumash, Uveirach es lach b'chaveis meimecha, right? To bless someone means to make something good happen to them, right? To use some spiritual power to make good things happen to them. That's Birkas Kohanim, right? But what does it mean to bless Hashem? We don't have to use our power to help Hashem. Hashem's perfect. He's infinite. He's omnipotent. So, what does Mendel say? The standard traditional understanding of what means Baruch Hashem is that we don't mean that we're blessing Hashem. Hashem doesn't need our blessing. Hashem is infinite. It's that we're sort of praising Hashem and saying how he's the source of all blessing, or we're somehow making some declarative statement at how great Hashem is, not that we're actually blessing God. And what does Nefesh HaChayim say? Ve'inich milas baruch, ein olashim tehillah of Hashem kmo shumam fi ha'amon. He says, no, the Amko says, that's alpi nigla. But, he says, alpi Kabbalah, says the Nefesh HaChayim, Baruch doesn't mean we're praising Hashem. It's not just merely a declarative statement like everybody thinks. Shahare kish Amar li Rabbi Shmuel, Yishmael b'ni Barcheini, lo Amar Shem Shevach. What's the Raya? The Gemara Baruch Davav, Hashem, one of these strange Gemaras that we just ignore. Hashem says to Yishmael, bless me. And Yishmael, Kohen Gadol, didn't praise Hashem. He actually blessed Mel Tefillah Baruch Hashrachim, right? Says, Yirotham Fanecha, etc., etc. Right? I'm sorry. Right, so he actually gave Hashem a blessing. Likewise, some have in the Shachar talking about Metzia, they said we bless Hashem, that means he needs a bracha. So, what does bracha mean? So he says, Baruch means you add to something. Right? Livarech means you, when the Kohanim bless us, that means they're adding to our goodness. Right? When Hashem blesses us, that means he adds to us. To bless means to improve something. That's what it means, bracha, just to use spiritual power to improve something as opposed to physical power. Right? That's very clear. That the standard language of Baruch in Tanakh doesn't mean to praise something or say how great they are. It means to actually improve it, right? Or to at least give some sort of spiritual wishes or prayer for improving it. It always talks about adding in the Lashon Baruch. And then Rabbi Mehemna, which is part of the Zohar, says explicitly that Baruch Ata Hashem means that we actually bring power down from a higher source to the Shem Havayah. Right, the first in the Zohar, that what does Baruch Ata Hashem mean? That we bring bracha, we bring power down from we bring koach down from a higher source, down to the Shem Havaya, down to Havaya, by saying Baruch Atah Hashem. So in the Zohar, it's very, very clear. I'll pick up all that's clear. What do we just say? That Nevi Chaim says that everyone thinks Baruch Hashem is a lashon of praising God. Right? That when we say Baruch Hashem, we're declaring God's greatness. We're praising Hashem. But he says it's not true. If you look in the grammar of the word Baruch, Baruch means to improve something, to use spiritual power to sort of add to or improve something. And that's before Zohar, he quotes the Raya Mehemna, that Baruch Hashem means that with our words, somehow we use our spiritual power to add greatness to add power and greatness to God. The kach kasev pri etzchayim zel shonu sod baruch kol mina ribui. Baruch means ribui. Kainu sham, etc. Ayin sham kavu rashi zom yisrael v'yurcheni v'chuli. So what is he saying? He says that baruch at Hashem bracha is really when we daven, we say any bracha, we're adding to Hashem, we're blessing Hashem. Literally, the purpose of this is very radical. Not just that the purpose of Baruch, etc., is not for us, even though later on he also adds that it's for us as well. But not only is it that we have to tell Hashem what we want, but no, we actually improve Hashem by saying these brachos. And you know, it's like the thing that all the chassidim say, L'shem yichud kodesh baruch hu shchinta, etc. What do they say? When I'm going to daven, when I'm going to do other mitzvos, I am going to add unity to Hashem, right? Basically, the same difference in Nigla and Nistar in terms of what Baruch means, that the standard understanding most people have is that Baruch is praising a pre-existing Kavua Hashem. But really, Alpi Kabbalah, Baruch means we are adding to Hashem. It's the same idea as Yichud Hashem, right? What does Yichud Hashem mean, the way most people traditionally think of it? What does it mean to be Miyachid Hashem? Anyone? If I told you the mitzvah of Yichud Hashem, what would you say that means?
Hashem has many places.
That's what you would have thought. Okay, I think most people think
mind,
means we declare God's unity. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad means we declare that Hashem is one, because there are pagans out there or other people who don't understand that. Right? But you go, well, no, what does Yichud Hashem mean? Means we make God one. God is split, and we have to unify Him back together, and that's what we say, L'shem Yichud Kodesh Baruch Hu Shchinta, right? That in order to be Yachid Hashem with His Shchinta, that's not a declaration. That fundamentally, what's the fundamental difference? I mean, again, it's hard to say the fundamental difference between Nigla and Nistar, right? But a fundamental difference in terms of how you look at Hashem between Nigla and Nistar is that in Nigla, in standard philosophy, you're the Mor Nevuchim or anything else like that, even though the Mor Nevuchim has hints towards this direction, is that Hashem kedekaimi kaimi, Hashem is perfect, doesn't need our help. Everything we do is for us in our relationship with Hashem, right? But Alpi Kabbalah, and this is really, you know, this is very pronounced from the time of the Arian on, but as you see, that he just quoted sources in the Zohar, so it goes back to the it goes back to all the way. That Alpi Kabbalah, the boldness of Kabbalah, is that quote unquote that Hashem needs us, right? That Hashem doesn't have enough power, and we add power by saying Baruch Atah Hashem. That Hashem is not unified. That Hashem is split. He's in Golus from himself, right? And right, we bring him out of Golus. I mean, you see, even in Shas, the regular Shas, you have hints of these ideas, by L'shem Yichud Kodesh Baruch Hu, by things like this. And this, of course, ties into to a famous idea of the, before we get back to the second paragraph, number 8, let's go to number 9 for a second. The end of number 9 is really repeating things that we saw last time. The beginning of number 9 has a famous, famous part of the Nefesh HaChayim, which you don't have to go this far, but he does. Even though it's before Shana Lacha that you're allowed to daven for what you want, right? You can add whatever you want. But really, your kavan and davening isn't that you have trouble. The people on high madrega, which he calls sharm b'li bosam, the proper derech is not to daven because you need. Because how could you really daven to Hashem to take away your tzar and yisurin? Right, really, like, what does it mean? Like, if the doctor's going to amputate you or give you a tough medicine, you're going to daven to take it away? Obviously, whatever medicine Hashem gives us, even if it's bitter, for a good reason. Halohema Ritiya Vasam Khabar Vomas Kamara and Yusum Lovam Lo Efo Nifshakh Nats Kabar Umless Taklakavana second very chief rak tsarkavoa. This is the famous idea of the Nefshachaim Tfila Litzarkavoa, that the reason we're davening is not because we need. It's not because we feel bad for ourselves. Because what do you mean? No, we trust Hashem to take care of us. It's because Hashem needs Hashem Tsar. It's because we feel bad for Hashem Tsar. Okay, what's the basic point? Sorry, quotes that when we daven to Hashem, Hashem saved Klal Yisrael, it's not because we're suffering. No, the real ideal level, because Hashem's suffering to this tremendous Chil Hashem. So we feel bad for Hashem's suffering. And even when a Yachin suffers and it's not a Chil Hashem, still, when a Yid suffers, Hashem also suffers. Hashem also feels it. That's Imo Nochi B'tzara, even on the Yachid. And so ultimately, the Nefesh HaChaim says the ideal tefillah should be L'tzorech Gavoa, that really the whole point of tefillah is to help Hashem, because we feel bad for Hashem, because Hashem is tzar, and it should really be very selfless. Obviously, it's a high madriga, but it's just very radical.
How does our tefillah get rid of his tzar?
So then in this part, he says, like some of what we saw before him, that if you feel the tzar of the Shekhinah, then that'll be mitakim, whatever chatzam you need to mitakim, and then Hashem won't have to punish you anymore. So he'll be able to relieve his tzar, which is similar to the more mainstream idea. But let's go back to the first point. What's the basic kiddush of Nefesh HaChaim? And again, I don't think the Nefesh HaChaim is something weird here. I think this is, you know, everyone has their own twist. But the basic idea of the relationship between us and Hashem is the basic idea of Kabbalah, is the basic difference between Nigla and Nistar, is that when we daven, we are helping Hashem, kiviyachol, right? He adds, we should feel bad for the tzar of Hashem. That's not an all Kabbalistic svarim. But the basic idea is that when we daven, we are helping Hashem. Baruch Hashem, we're adding power to Hashem. That is not just adding power to Hashem's PR, right? Not just like we're declaring to other people they know how great Hashem is. We're really making Hashem greater. That is a basic idea of Kabbalah. Now, yeah.
When this idea that it's making Hashem greater, I'm going to be talking more to understand what they mean, but are we referring to this?
Okay, so hold that thought for a moment, of course. Now, he said a little later on the sheet that that's another explanation of how tefillah works. How can tefillah work to make my prayers be answered? So one other explanation is, well, the more power Hashem has, so the more good things he can do for me, right? The greater Hashem is, if we assume Hashem is fundamentally good, even though he can take dinim within him as well, or at least this is tzad of dinim, the greater Hashem is, then it makes sense that the more good things should happen to me. So another conception of how tefillah works, to have my tefillah's answered, is by improving Hashem, we bring more forces of good into the world. Now this whole radical idea that like we have power over Hashem or something, that Hashem needs us to improve him, this could sound a little curative. This is a basic Kabbalistic idea. It's not specific to the Nefesh HaChaim. Number 8 is not really specific to the Nefesh HaChaim. This could sound a little curative. Correct. I mentioned earlier that I left it out, but a little later in Shar Beis, like Perek Hey or something, or Dalet, he goes back and says, and this explains what tefillah accomplishes, what I said in Perek Beis and Makor 8. So he does say a little later, I just left it out, that Makor 8 explains what tefillah accomplishes. I apologize for that oversight. Now, this could sound a little kfirah, and as we know, there have been people through the generations who thought that Kabbalah was kfirah. You know, when they first published all the Kabbalistic books, back in the time of the Rishonim, there were people who came out and said, what kind of kfirah is this? And even 100 years ago, the famous Rabbi Yechi Kafach in Yemen, in Yemen, a lot of people didn't hold from Kabbalah at all, because they had the Masorah from the Rambam, the Mor Nebuchim, etc. Then half the people learned about Kabbalah and started holding from Kabbalah. There were big fights, big politics in Tayman, like 200, 100 years ago. And there was a big Rav Yechud Kafa who came out in the Furish. He has books, where Chait Yeshiva translates his books into English and spreads them, about how Kabbalah is Kfirah, and anyone who holds from Kabbalah is an Apikores, and they were very, very, very harsh, that basically you're not a firm Yid if you hold from Kabbalah. Because What is all this Kabbalistic stuff, right? That God needs you, that God's not perfect, that God is split in two and you have to unify him? Adrabba, that's paganism. Right? L'shem yifu kajabrechu, you have to put back kajabrechu and skinti because Hashem is Humpty Dumpty who, you know, fell off the wall and now you have to put him back together again. They said, what kind of fear is this? And Adhayom Azad, there's the yeshiva in Far Rockaway, which holds from this philosophy. That Kabbalah is all kefira because it denies the whole idea of the unity and perfection of God. And therefore, that Kabbalah is totally usher and totally against the basic idea of Judaism. And that's where Yechi Kafach did not find a very receptive audience among worldwide Torah leaders for his views. As you can imagine, Rav Kook and all the Chachmei Yerushalayim put up the Cherem back, you know, almost 100 years ago. What? Yes, that's not a problem. Anyway, that is, okay, there are people at Hayom Hazeh who hold that way. But I think it's clear that they're wrong. I mean, besides the fact that, you know, I think it's clear that they're wrong. Obviously, you can't say that, you know, basically like a Masorah that goes back a long time and all the, maybe not all, but, you know, most of the Gedolim that we know of throughout the last many, many hundreds of years. And we don't know who, going back further than that. But Menasam, mostly Gedolim as well, have learned Kabbalah, have understood it and delved into it and been osek in it. You know, to say they're all kofrim and apikorsim is just seems a little crazy. And obviously doesn't make sense. Someone says in a press conference of Lipsing, you have to hold from Kabbalah. So he said, well, you know, look at all the people who respect and the Rishonim and Achronim and what they, you know, how much they were osik in Kabbalah. So he says, you can't say Kabbalah is not true. He says, that's just against the Masorah. So let's assume that Kabbalah is not really apikorsis. There, Yechi Kafa was a very unique, eccentric person who went a little too far. And, I mean, there, back in the 13th, 14th century, there were more people held that way. But we popped in against them. So why isn't it Kfirah? So if you look at any book of Kabbalah, obviously, if you go back and look at things like the Zohar, it's harder to find exact explanations for things, because they're not written as philosophical books. They're written more like Midrashim. But if you look at modern days, like Nefesh HaChayim, which is written more as an organized philosophical book, obviously, you'd expect them to explain. So why is Kabbalah not apikorsis? Then he tells us right here, right? He doesn't leave you hanging. You don't have to search around someplace else. Look at the second paragraph of 8. What Mendel says, omnum inline, this is this paradox or tension or whatever is a yesod of Kabbalah. Otherwise, Rabbi Yechi Kafach's right. Omnum inline bracha lo yisbarach shemo enik vadal atmos adam yochid baruchu kaviyacho chalila v'chalila says chas v'shom the ein sof chas v'shom, like Hashem really, we're talking about him. What he basically says is all of Kabbalah chas v'shom chalila, that it's really talking about Hashem himself. You know, atmos Adam Yachid Baruch Hu. Ki Umaruma called Bracha, right? He's beyond this whole idea of Bracha. Aval Inyan, Kamal Shkaz Bazar, because Baruch Hu Sosim Megalia, right? There's a hidden part, which we can't talk about, and a revealed part, which we can. Ki Atmos Ein Sof Baruch Hu Sosim Kol Stimen, Ve'en Lechnos Achas Shom Shom Ne'echal, Filim Shem Avaya Baruch Hu, Filim Shel Yod Debei. He said, basically, look, the ultimate infinite real Hashem, like Hashem really, you can't talk about him at all. You can't capture him with any word, not even the Kodesh Shel Yod. You can't say anything. Basically what he's saying is that every Mekubal knows that if you're really talking about Hashem himself, just read the Mordechuchim and learn that nothing we say can describe Hashem, that he's beyond all our understanding, etc. It said, the Rambam's 100% right in the Mordechuchim about Hashem himself. Of course nothing we say in Kabbalah is talking about Hashem himself. Then we'd be up, of course, Hashem is beyond all description. And Hashem doesn't need our help, and Hashem doesn't need us to put them together, etc., etc. Of course, Hashem is perfect, he's infinite. Right? And even Ein Sof doesn't really capture him. Rather, all of Kabbalah is not about, right? Maybe that's a sort of tzimtzum, how we get, which is a very difficult thing to understand, between the thing we can't understand and that which we can. But all of Kabbalah is not really about Hashem himself. Then it would be apikorsis. It's really about the way we understand and the way we receive the Shefa from Hashem, mitzah, the different kochos that come out of him by his creating and connecting with the Olamos. Basically, what he's talking about is the Marechet of the framework of the Sphiros. All the Sphiros are not Hashem himself, right? There are seven parts to Hashem, seven Sphiros. Have there be seven parts of Hashem, then you'd be an Apikoros. Right? Basically, all of Kabbalah, if you just took it in an oversimplified sense, is Apikorsis. Right? Whether there are two parts to Hashem or seven parts to Hashem, it's equal Apikorsis. So what's the whole thing about Sphiros? Says, obviously, Hashem is unified beyond everything. Read the Rambam Mor Nevuchim. The Rambam says Mor Nevuchim that you can't say anything about Hashem because he's beyond everything. And he's absolutely right. You can't say everything about him. So what's the point of Kabbalah? Even though you can't say anything, everything about Hashem himself, the whole idea of Kabbalah is that there's a whole framework of emanations that flow from Hashem, which you can talk about. And then you could say there are seven, you could say there's a golos of the Shekhinah from the Kodesh Brichu, and we have to reunite them, etc. Then you could say a lot of things. That's not Apikorsis, because you're not talking about Hashem himself. You're talking about the way Hashem comes through to this world, or perhaps if you're advanced, other worlds as well. Although let's stick to this world for now. So if you're doing the way Hashem comes through to this world, then it's not Apikorsis. Say there's two sides, there's a battle between two sides, and say there's seven parts on each side and 49 parts, and that's a golos. You can say all these things, and they're philosophically beseder, because you're not talking about Hashem himself, and obviously the whole point of Kabbalah is not only are they philosophically beseder, but they allow you to accomplish very deep things if you understand them properly. So, the truth, I mean, obviously, you shouldn't be surprised to find the true answer that obviously Kabbalah is not Apikorsis. It's just that it looks like Apikorsis if you don't understand some fundamental differences, and obviously the more complex you learn, the more Kabbalah you learn, the more you have to understand these subtleties and know exactly how to make these chilukim. It's not always so simple. But if you fall into the trap of not understanding the chiluk between what we're not talking about and what we are talking about, then you're an apikoros. So just the point goes, you're not supposed to fall into that trap. You're supposed to understand it properly. And if you understand it properly, then, right, okay, it's not the mekubalim's fault if people fall into a trap and aren't careful. You should have zahiras. But if you understand it properly, then it might be bordering an apikorsis, but it could be that all very important deep emes borders an apikorsis because you're talking about important things, and if you talk about important things, then obviously, if you get one thing wrong, you're an apikoros. If you make one wrong turn, you're an apikoros. If you want to go someplace where you can't make the wrong turn and be an apikoros, then don't talk about anything deep. You know, then stick to Shor Shenogeh Sapara and you'll be okay. But the point of Kabbalah is that it's not an accusation that if you take one wrong turn, you're an apikoros, because that's just the nature of talking about deep things. I'm sure there's I meant to do it without Pnimis. Obviously, things are just a short of horror.
This, in almost a good way and a bad way, this, it just reminds me of how the Rambam and the Rabban both describe the history of Avodah Zarah. That at first, people understood, oh, there's God. And then Enosh and whatever, and things happened, and people started to think, oh, I know that the sun is not God. I know that. But, you know, he's, you know, it, I relate to God through the sun. And the sun provides light.
Okay, excellent. I want to come back to that.
So, but aren't, why would you say like we shouldn't be? You know, you shouldn't get involved in these things because they are dangerous. But that they got involved in that.
And
it happened. Bad. And it happened exactly. It happened.
Okay, so hold that phone for a second till we hear from our local Makoba.
my blood. Maybe this is an oversimplified question, but isn't just even saying that there is a Ein Sof, and then there's a Shekhinah, or there's a part of God that we can interact with. I'm saying that there's those are different. Isn't that already a lack of Yichud, saying that there is an inherent division in God?
No, because it's not in God himself, it's in God's emanation to this world.
Right, saying there's an emanation in a God.
Okay, so obviously, the Mekubalim understand that that's not saying there's more than one God because you can't successfully. This is a philosophical. You can do successfully Yuchalvi, God Himself, Hashem Himself, the Ein Sof Baruch Hu, which has no words can capture, and the sort of way in which He's, you know, whatever the word is, through the Spheros. And so Rav Yechiel Kapa says, no, that's a false distinction, and it's a bunch of fear. You're still saying there's seven or two or 49 or many gods. But obviously we hold that's not a false distinction. That's a subtle, complex distinction, but it is a distinction. But now I just want to end with the three shitas on Kabbalah. Right? Again, two of which are mainstream. But for the sake of intellectual completeness, we have to mention all three. One shita on Kabbalah is the shita of Rav Yechiel Kapa. That this is all, there's no distinction here. Either there's one God or there isn't, and you're a bunch of apikorsim, which is not mainstream Judaism. The other shita is, you know, I don't know what to call it, the shita of I guess if we want to, we can attribute it to Hasidim, although it's spread a lot since then, which is that, no, we just, it's a challenge we have to meet, and we have to make these subtle distinctions, and, you know, the payoff is worth taking the risk and taking the challenge that you have to make the subtle distinctions. Then, of course, there's the literature Masorah, which I think is our Masorah, about Kabbalah. What's our Masorah about Kabbalah? So I've spoken to many, many Rambam and Yeshiva about this. It's not, of course, that that Kabbalah is a bunch of nonsense or apikorsus, but it's also not that, you know, we should be, you know, sending Madonna copies of the Zohar, etc. It's the Sheikh of the Noda Yehuda. As we well know, the Noda Yehuda was an opponent of Hasidus. As we well know, the Gra and the Noda Yehuda are two big opponents of Hasidus, and no one's a bigger Makobel than the Gra. And the Noda Yehuda is also a reasonable Makobel. His famous Shut Noda Yehuda, he says here, he got a shot of how to say l'shem yichud asher chadoshim yikarav nispashe. Right? What was Kabbalah through the generations? Well, let's ask for lifting. What does he hold from Kabbalah? He says, I hold what Rishonim held from Kabbalah. You know, that, that a dozen people in each generation should learn it. Meaning, what did the Noda Yehuda say? He says, chadoshim yikarav baru. What's the chiddush of Hasidus? Now, I don't think there were mechadish any Kabbalistic Torahs, although I'm not such a big bucky. The chiddush is that Kabbalah used to be for, like, Kabbalah yeshivas, right? Meaning there's, like, one yeshiva in Yerushalayim someplace where a bunch of very, very holy people sit. And, again, Kabbalah yeshivas doesn't mean they play guitar and sing karma. It means they are bigger intellectuals than the Litvaks who are learning Bava Basra, who sit and really intellectually delve into the Kabbalah. And the Hasidim says, no, every milkman should really be osik in these inyanim. So the Noda Yehuda says, Chadosh mikor nispashe v'nitfas b'sidurim. He never said any meishav atzer tashalani nosach hamirasa. You tell me the answer. You also realize never to tell me also. Should you say it? Well, that is a ra'a chola v'dorenu. He says the eldor shalip is my name. Shlo yodim nosach zevlo amru v'ha'yu amelim kol yemei b'torah mitzvah. I call up the torah v'alpi apostle shir. The brain novim imkor ma'in chayim yama talmud. I lay never too much shiram time. Saying behem ahem asher also pri lamalu v'gadol me'asu ma'im chasdam. He says from all the doors until now. Look, the Ramban himself said, don't try to understand the Kabbalistic parts of Ramban al Torah, which aren't even so hardcore. Right? In the Dor Shel Faneinu, regular people kept the Torah, al pi nigla, and were tremendous tzaddikim. Avob Doreinu, Hazek, Ozwa, Torah, Shem, Bukor, Mayim, Chayim, Shnea, Talmud, Bab, Yushalvi, Lachs of Lehem, Boros, Nishbarim, right? That basically they left nigla and started thinking they could learn Kabbalah. What's the problem? The problem is that he's against Kabbalah. Everyone is a chutzpah saying, I can understand Kabbalah. Everyone thinks they're the top of the world. Right? No, for people, there's some people, the Olam is made for them, and they're in a Madrega. Everyone thinks, okay, a little harsh, I wouldn't necessarily quote them as like something. And then he gets the whole thing, I'm not going to read the whole thing about, don't we say you need Kavana? So he basically says that the stumble is shmah when it comes to these things. He says, the Zohar never meant that every Yud had to be chavan everything in the Zohar. It means that if you keep the Torah, then everything that says in the Zohar works. You just have to keep the Torah, you have to have come on to be open Hashem, and everything in the Zohar works the same way as for the last couple thousand years. All given, kept the Torah stam. And then Al Pi Kabbalah, whatever had to happen, happened, as long as they had straight in their heart that they want to be open Hashem, it'll work for you also. And then he brings a great raya, he says. See, he brings a raya, everyone knew at the end of the fourth paragraph of Zvachim, what were they even talking? End of the fourth paragraph of Zvachim. They were attacking not even to say Lashma in Karbanos, lest you say Shalom Lashma. So you know what? Just do Karbanos Stam, rely on Stam Lashma, because if you start thinking Lashma, you might end up thinking Shalom Lashma. So basically says, come over here, right? If you start thinking Lashma Lashem Yichud, who knows where you'll end up? Just do Mitzvah Stam.
A little bit the other.
What?
It sounds like a little bit of the other.
I know the whole Avodah's basic mitzvah is always a little bit of the other. I don't think you think so. So that's he says, look at the end of the fourth last line of the second paragraph. Basically says you make one wrong mistake, you're a kotzis and a tios. Right? You make one wrong mistake, you're not bikoris. You should have come on to be over Hashem to do it for the mitzvah. And then he has some famous other lumnus in the next paragraph, he says, don't you need kavana? He says, that's why Chazam Ratak and Brachos, help you get kavana. Which is a very important lumnus in terms of the role of Birkas HaMitzvos. Okay, basically, what does Noda Yehuda say? He says, I don't think he's saying that Mikubolim and Shara Shamayim shouldn't say L'Shem Yichud. I don't think the Noda Yehuda meant no one in the door should be Mechavim Kabbalistic Yichudim. I think what he meant is that you can't start having everyone talk about Kabbalah because it just ends up being Kitzas Benetios. It just ends up turning into Kfirah. Because, you know, if even in the regular, like, Khatas and Ola, they were close to Shalol Lishmo, Kavachomer here, when you do one Shalol Lishmo, and you turn into an Apikoris, and I think that's sort of the middle path when it comes to Kabbalah, which is what everyone held until a couple hundred years ago, and certainly my Masor in this, is that, you know, Kabbalah might be dealing with very complex in Yanim, but if everyone starts getting into it too much, then it's just, even someone sophisticated, still you're always like one tiny step from apikorsus, all your kavanas, et cetera, et cetera. And that not everyone's necessarily in the madrega to navigate that and for the payoff to be more than the risk. And I think that's why, you know, why are we not osik in Kabbalah? Why don't we say l'shem yichud, et cetera, et cetera? Because Noda Yehuda says that, you have to be on a very high madrega in order to have the proper kavanah. So the rest of us will end up, I'm not saying we'll become, of course, we'll go off the derech and, you know, go join some cult or something, but we'll end up losing more than we gain, because in trying to have all these kavanahs, we'll end up having more negative kavanahs than positive kavanahs, meaning makar, more than rabona. And I think that's why we're not osik in Kabbalah, because the whole premise of all these kabbalistic inyanim is something which is very, 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 you have to be very sophisticated and subtle about it, because one small step from our precursors.
Just from a historical perspective, what do we do with the Nefesh Chaim? I mean, in terms of, it's definitely a Talmud Sugra, and it seems to be...
Right, I assume what we do with the Nefesh Chaim is, obviously, there are Madregas here. I mean, the Nefesh Chaim is not writing for the Amcha.
But he says you should have Kavanah.
What?
He says you should have Kavanah, and it's better to have Kavanah than just that. I'm not sure if he's talking about regular Kavanah.
Right, So, there may be different levels of in between. I'm not sure. It could be I'm not a bucky enough in the Nefesh HaChayim to know exactly what he would think Klapei the Noda Yehuda, or who he's talking to, etc. You know, it could be that the Noda Yehuda really didn't think anyone should be. It could be the Noda Yehuda also. He was talking about the Amcha. Maybe he admitted it. Talmidim of Chaim Volozhin were on a different Madrega.
I'm talking about the Shemir of the basic Kavanah for Mitzvah.
Yeah.
Right.
He was only talking about it as a preface to saying, but don't count to the Mitzvahs.
Right, so you have to figure out exactly, obviously there are in-between levels, and there are some levels that are, you could draw the line different places in terms of how close you're coming to the edge of the cliff. But okay, that's just a little, I wouldn't call it an introduction to Kabbalah, that would be a little arrogant, but just a little tie into tefillah, a very different perspective, the whole point of tefillah be Kabbalah, and it's a good opportunity to understand, number one, like some basic different ways of looking at the world of Pinigla and Alpi Nistar, and to understand some of the debates going on about the role of Kabbalah in the Judaism, and most importantly, to understand where we come from in terms of the Noda Yehuda, as to the fact that just if you have Masorah not to be Osek the Kabbalah, and not to do all these Kabbalistic practices, that doesn't mean that you're that you belong in Yeshiva Bnei Torah necessarily. That there's such a thing, Alpi the Noda Yehuda, as not saying Kabbalah is not for for most people in the door, without denying that that Kabbalah is real Amkus and is part of our Masorah.
There's certain.